Good evening and welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, counselor, and marriage and family therapist. Our topic this evening is play therapy. I invite our listeners to call in with comments and questions. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. This evening we have as our guest licensed professional counselor and registered play therapist Nicole Lahr and licensed clinical social worker and registered play therapist Linda Grayson. Nicole, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your practice.
Thanks, Shelley. It's great to be here. I'm really excited to talk a little bit about play therapy. It's something that's near and dear to my heart and something I'm just really passionate about. As you've mentioned, I am a licensed professional counselor and a registered play therapist. Really what that means is I've had a lot of training and schooling and classes that equipped me to work with children who have either behavioral concerns, mental health concerns, and I'm able to work with them and their families. I'm really passionate about helping children overcome life obstacles and helping their parents or caregivers or maybe even their grandparents learn how to support and assist these children as they're going through their life changes or situations. In my practice, it's located here in Shreveport in the outpatient clinic of Brentwood Hospital. I work with children and adolescents ranging from ages 3 to about 17 years old. In my practice, I try to focus on a preventative approach. Not necessarily want to just put a band-aid on the behavior that might be families are coming into therapy for, but I want to really help the child or the adolescent gain coping skills or problem-solving techniques, increase in self-esteem, to be able to have those skills as they take on later in life. Oftentimes, as children, we have these imprints. We see how dad has expressed anger or mom handles stress. We go through different life situations and we kind of learn these skills of how to handle stress. And for me, in my practice, I get to teach these healthy coping skills for handling stress, how to express maybe anger and frustration in positive ways, or how to help children when they feel really nervous or worried about trying something new. It's something that I find really rewarding and passionate about. And I'm just always grateful when I'm able to help a family in need.
Well, thank you for being here this evening, Nicole. And Linda Grayson, what about you? Tell us a little bit about you and about your practice.
I am a licensed clinical social worker, which you mentioned, and a registered play therapist. I'm in private practice at Interactional Services. I see adults and children. In fact, the range of my practice is probably from 3 years old to elderly, you know, into their 80s. I'm a Medicare provider, so that enables me to see anyone with Medicare, which is not common for all practitioners. I don't have a particular specialty when it comes to children. I particularly enjoy the younger ones from 3 to, say, 10 is probably the sweet spot for me. I co-facilitate a social skills group for children that are in kindergarten, first, second, and third grade, where we're teaching basic social skills, which is something that many of the children in that age group are struggling with. Interrupting, over-talking, just not having good manners, knowing how to handle social situations. So I think that's about it.
And those social skills groups are great. They are so helpful in teaching children how to interact socially. It's such a great way to really help them develop those skills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation this evening. We are discussing play therapy. Call in with your question or comment. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. So let's first start off with, what is play therapy? It may not be something that everyone, all of our listeners, are familiar with. So what is play therapy and how can play be therapeutic?
I think that's a fantastic question. It's a question I know myself, I'm sure Linda gets a lot very frequently, either in social events when you're talking about your occupation, about what you do. I also get it a lot from families coming in. You know, what makes you maybe different than other counselors? Why is playing with toys, for a 45-minute session, why is this going to be helpful? And I think for play therapy, we have an association. It's really our large framework. It's called Association for Play Therapy. It helps us keep our rules, our ethics, our legal obligations. It's kind of what founded play therapy. And they have this really big sort of definition for it. It's the systematic use of theoretical model to establish an interpersonal process wherein trained play therapists use these therapeutic powers of play to help clients prevent and resolve psychosocial difficulties and achieve optimal growth and development. I think really in layman's terms, play therapy is a form of counseling that we use when we use the toys to help the children express and communicate their feelings.
I often tell parents when they're in my office that play therapy is the developmentally appropriate kind of therapy for children because they are not at a developmental level where they can sit on the couch and talk to you and tell you their problems and why they feel what they feel. They don't have the language for it. And when I do find a child that has language, it's usually someone else's language that they're parroting back to me. So I have zero expectation that a child will be able to come in and sit in my office and explain to me the dynamics of what's going on in their personal life. So we use toys and games and playful interventions to help them work through emotions, to learn new skills, to be able to express themselves in a variety of ways.
I think it's also important to bring up the fact that it's not maybe regular play. The play that takes place in the playroom is not the same maybe as recess or the play that they do with their friends after school. You know, that is like spontaneous play and it's natural and of course essential part of development process for children. But I think one of the main differences within play therapy, it's more systematic and it has a therapeutic approach and background behind the reasons why we're doing what we're doing as trained professionals.
And just watching play therapy is, for me, fascinating because you can really see how children's experiences, their traumas, and so forth will come across during their play. You can see them reenacting and acting out some of their experiences and the difficulties that they are having through their play. So it is really their language.
Yeah, Shelley, I think that's an interesting point. I have families often come to me and they say, well, will it work, right? Will the child begin to play out these maybe anxieties or the worries or their anger? You know, how do we know that they're going to be able to play that out? And I have never not seen a child be able to begin to kind of express themselves through those forms and mediums of play.
Yeah, it's almost like it's just the natural way for them to communicate.
Yeah.
So what kind of disorders or issues can play therapy be used to treat?
The number one reason for that children come into therapy is anxiety. So that's a perfect one. Mood disorders, a child that's been bullied, a child whose parents are going through a divorce or separation, a child that's been through a trauma, there's been a death in the family, they're struggling academically, they're struggling with a diagnosis like ADHD or ADD and the negative feedback that they get from having that kind of disorder. So there's almost anything, Shelley.
Yeah, I think I often see maybe the families and parents bring them in with anger, right? They say, oh, they need anger management. But I think as we begin to play and as we begin to kind of join in that counseling process, there are those sort of worries and anxieties and a sadness underneath that anger that's maybe it's not necessarily, you know, I'm throwing this chair or I'm yelling and screaming no at mom and dad, that there are some more underlying causes of because I'm worried or I'm scared or I don't feel safe right now.
In fact, there are only three identified cases where where play therapy wouldn't be the appropriate thing, and that would be a child that's on the severe end of the autism spectrum, severely oppositional defiant, and I've forgotten the third one.
Anything, I think, with psychosis.
Psychosis, yeah.
Wouldn't be something we'd want to begin to work with. That just wouldn't be the right fit for treatment for them.
So the vast majority of issues that children are dealing with, then play therapy would be an appropriate approach to try to address some of those, whether it be a mood disorder, a depression, an anxiety, bullying, social problems, problems within the family that they are dealing with or processing. Play therapy would be a useful therapeutic tool to help them to work through those issues.
Useful and appropriate.
Mm-hmm. I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation this evening. We are discussing play therapy. Call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So would you talk a little bit about the different types of play therapy that there are that play therapists use?
You want me to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, Linda, go for it.
So you can roughly divide it into two categories, the child-centered play therapy and the more direct play therapy, so indirect versus direct. And in indirect play therapy, which is what Nicole and I start out with in a with a child, the child is in charge of the session. They come into the room, and oftentimes the playroom looks like a playroom. The toys are on display. The child gets to pick what they want to do, and they lead the session. The therapist follows their lead. That's extremely appropriate, especially for the very small children on the lower age groups. And as a child develops, gets older, they move out of that concrete thinking phase into more abstract abilities. You can stage more intervention, so you move into a more directed type of play therapy. So that's broadly the two differences.
Yeah, when I think non-directive or child-centered play therapy, I try to explain it as the child is going to, lead and guide the session. Oftentimes, we found through research that this is more effective and more beneficial. Sometimes it may take more sessions, right? It may be a longer process, but their ability to be able to problem solve on their own, or maybe they have, picked up a sword and want to maybe act out as being the bad guy and want to kind of figure out what is that role like, or how do I then overcome the bad guy? How do I overcome this adversity? It's them, they're able to direct what they need at that day, that week, and we're able to see certain themes through it. Oftentimes with more of a directive approach, if a child comes in, we want to teach them something, we want to teach him a coping skill or a social skill, that has more of a quicker, right, a faster, more effective learning style because we're teaching this one particular skill. But I think we might be missing out on some of the big pictures. Are we developing that self-esteem? Are we developing those problem-solving techniques? Or are we simply teaching deep breathing that day? So I think a lot of play therapists use ebb and flow, a little bit of both, kind of directive when needed and non-directive, and depending on the patient, depending on the child and what they might need, and depending on our personal, styles that we each have developed and have.
So I know that we've touched on this a little bit already, but I think it's important to maybe go back to it just for a minute. Is, how does play therapy work? Because I think that this is something that is often, as we said, kind of confusing to people. Like, how exactly is it that we can have a child come in and play and that is therapeutic for them? And as we said, that's part of their language and so forth. But would you mind kind of going through, is there any kind of research or developmental theory or anything like that, kind of talking about how play therapy works, how it's therapeutic?
Yeah, those are always great questions we get a lot. I always say that as a therapist, as a registered play therapist, we are trying to make and create the safe environment. So we are, our offices are called playrooms, and that is something I just love. I have a giant smile every time I get to say it. I'm sure Linda feels the same way. That's really exciting that we are able to not just fill our offices with toys, right? We didn't just go to Target and throw a bunch of toys in the cart. We have systematically picked out various toys and medians and games that each have a reason, each have a place. And we have put them specifically in different places in the playroom to create this safe environment for the patient to feel comfortable. I would like to think that if I am talking with a friend about my stressors, my worries, things that I have going on in life, I want to build that relationship where I feel safe, I feel comfortable, I feel like I can open up. And that's kind of the role that as a registered play therapist, we try to have with the children as well. We want them to be as comfortable and safe as possible. So when they come into that room, if we are being non-directive, right, child-centered, they're able to pick what they want to maybe play with or work on or, do throughout the session. And I think some of the toys that we commonly use or we, you know, commonly see in the playroom include different like sandboxes with miniatures. We have different games, maybe different puppets. You know, oftentimes we have blocks or a dollhouse or maybe a kitchen set. And each one is kind of picked out specifically for what we want to be able to teach or that environment that we want to create.
I think if one of the things I think about is how children use play. And why that's important. It's like they experience different roles. They can be the bad guy for 10 minutes. They can be the good guy for 10 minutes. They problem solve while they're playing. And you see that directly in their play. Even playing a board game teaches you a lot about a child and teaches a child a lot about getting along in the world. The basics of taking turns, learning how to be a good loser. Learning how to be a good winner. I see a lot of role plays and struggling with figuring out how they want to be in different situations. And just really almost like trying on those clothes or trying on that role, acting that out. And how does that feel? If I could be the strong one in this situation.
Linda, I like the point that you made that we kind of watch them take on those different shapes. I often think of the game Jenga. So it's that game with the building blocks and you build this ginormous tower and then you pull out one piece and sometimes it all crumbles down. And oftentimes, you know, I try to explain to families that we're not just in the playroom playing Jenga. But really, they are beginning to learn how to build their self-confidence, their self-esteem, their frustration tolerance when it does keep falling down. And it is so frustrating that it just keeps knocking down over and over again. Do they continue to rebuild it? Are they perseverant? Are they resilient with it? Or do we just kind of say, oh, that was too much disappointment for me to handle right now. I'm going to move on to something that I know I can achieve.
That's so interesting. I use Jenga, especially with kids that are impulsive, ADHD types, because they want to grab a block and jerk the block out and do not think about consequences. What's going to happen? So I get them to slow way down with that game and think about, like, touch a block. Is that the one you're thinking of moving? What's touching it? What would happen if you move that one? Maybe you should think about another one. And just slow down that process of thinking about what they're doing and the consequences of what they're doing through play.
So even as Jenga, as our example, both Linda and I have shared that, you know, it's not about Jenga, but it's about that big picture, really what's taking place in the playroom. And that's really what play therapy is all about.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation this evening. We are talking about play therapy. Call with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. What are the benefits of play therapy?
There are so many benefits of play therapy. We could just sit here for the whole hour and talk about how it can be helpful for children. I think some of the ones that we predominantly want to focus on is being able to build up their coping skill toolbox. These children are able to, you know, work out and problem solve to that they have these skills that, again, aren't just for this one problem of how do I talk to the bully at school or how am I able to, you know, meet new people and go to new situations, but rather big picture. They're able to have these skills that are able to help them express their emotions in positive ways, be able to identify how they're feeling, be able to learn how to have conflict resolution. All of these skills that we have to develop as we get older, as we grow up, we use every day as adults. These are the skills that we can learn through play therapy as children. And they're just getting an extra dose, an extra support of it through registered play therapist.
Something as simple as the relationship. It's like there's a lot of learning that goes on between just being in relationship with someone. And that's the relationship between the therapist and the child is a very special, almost sacred relationship. So they learn things about relationships during the process. Even if we're not directly working on teaching a skill, there's things that they figure out through play and things that are modeled by the therapist that they learn from the modeling.
I think that play therapy also can be really beneficial when we're talking about children who have gone through trauma. So children that have gone through life events that have just been really devastating and challenging for them, this is one area that they are able to kind of recreate, if you will, what their body is experiencing, that they don't have to use the words, that we're not processing here with the words of maybe what took place, but rather we're seeing it played out. So it's a sort of safe way to help them. So one of the benefits of play therapy is helping them kind of resolve this or unresolved trauma. Another thing that I see oftentimes is that they're able to just have those social skills that they maybe didn't have when they came in. Linda can probably speak more to that because she does that social skill group, but able to see them kind of grow, learn how to be a friend, how to use kind words with others, you know, just social skills that we use every day, they begin to develop as they kind of are playing through the process.
So I know that we've talked a little bit about some techniques, but I'd like to talk a little more about specific techniques and kind of how these techniques look and feel and smell and sound and so forth. Would y'all mind sharing a little bit about, you know, the various techniques that you use?
So this is a little awkward because Nicole and I are both child-centered, so we're not heavy on techniques, but I can tell you some of the things that I incorporate, I guess, when if we reach a lull during a session or if I can see that there's an intervention. There are actually some therapeutic games on the market, and I use those, the talking, thinking, feeling game and some related games. I always have a couple of board games that encourage strategic thinking. So I use those. I have a game that requires cooperative problem solving between the child and the therapist. Jenga is a game. I play pickup sticks, the same kind of theory with the Jenga. We do a lot of drawing and art work. There's a lot of draw me a picture of your family doing something. Draw me a picture of what happened at school today that was upsetting. I have three separate sand trays and about 1,000 miniatures, and we do sand play construction. Show me a scene of your family at home, or just free play in the sand and let them come up with whatever they want to build. And I have seen some amazing healing happen through working in the sand tray. And just, I can think of one where the scene just developed week after week after week, and you could tell that there was something important going on in the play, and watching that issue be resolved in the sand tray. That's some that I come to my mind quickly. How about you, Nicole?
Yeah, I think we were thinking of, you mentioned kind of that repetitive play, and that's something that we haven't really touched upon, is that children oftentimes when they're working through a particular issue or just a challenge, something that they're going through, they may begin to play out the scenario and then change it every little bit, every so often. So each week they might come in and begin to play out however they want to in the art or through sand or through, you know, role play, and then they might slowly change little pieces of it. And as we're seeing that change, they're kind of working through those skills. You can almost see them slowly growing as they're trying to figure out what is happening. What do I do? How do I respond? What skills do I need? So some children can come in and for weeks and weeks and weeks kind of play the same sort of game, if you will, whether that's in the sand or art or whatever medium they want to use, but they're kind of playing that out. I know for me that one of the main just play therapy techniques, whether you're directive or non-directive, is being able to kind of paraphrase what is taking place back to the child using the words. So when they do look scared and they are playing out a situation, maybe telling them, I'm wondering if you're scared. Being able to kind of use as much feelings vocabulary throughout the session to help them, one, identify what they might be going through, or two, then learning, this is what a scared face looks like, or this is what happens when my character feels mad, or they begin to kind of learn those skills. It's called feelings identification. It's kind of the baseline for empathy, and it's one of the baselines for us being able to communicate and talk about our feelings. So that is one technique I often use. Sometimes it frustrates the patients or children that I'm working with. They might look at me very odd and say, why are you repeating things? And then I know I've just repeated it too much, maybe a little bit too much, and I have to step back a little bit. But I'm there for them to be able to help and support them.
I have one thing in my playroom that is probably used by almost every child, and it is a fishbowl with blue sand in the bottom. I have fish in it that have feeling words attached to them, and we go fish for feelings. And when they catch a fish, we read the feeling, and they get to talk about a time they felt that. Wonderful way to teach children to identify their feelings.
Yeah, I think feelings identification is almost at like the bottom, the foundation of play therapy, because it's at such the foundation and the bottom of the skills that we need as we grow up and as we get older. As children, we only see the skill being modeled, whether it's our parents or whoever we're living with, older brothers, older siblings. We also might see feelings being modeled through us at school by the teacher when she gets really stressed out. What does it look like? How does it sound like? But these aren't skills that necessarily are taught to us. They don't go to school and learn social skills. They don't go to school and learn feelings, expression, and identification, and how do I express that I'm feeling angry. So play therapy is, again, just another way to help them kind of learn these techniques that they use as they grow up throughout adulthood.
Well, and you know, I know because I work primarily with adults, but adults, you know, being able to identify feelings is so important because I have adults that come in who I have to work with, you know, identifying feelings and really, you know, is that anger? Is that actually jealousy? You know, is that frustration? Or, you know, what is the feeling actually? It's not always mad, sad, glad. You know, there are other feelings. So really helping children to develop that vocabulary at a young age is going to benefit them on into adulthood. I invite our listeners to join our conversation. This evening, we are discussing play therapy. Call with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. What about family? We've talked about children. Can families be involved in play therapy?
Can and probably should be. My initial intake is always with the parents, where I get, you know, collect the background and kind of get their thinking on what's happened and what the issues are. Then I have regular appointments with the parents. There's another type of play therapy that involves the family, where the family meets together and they actually do some playful interventions with the family. My experience with that is fairly limited. I'm wondering about you, Nicole. Do you have an opportunity to do that?
I have used it on particular occasions. I think oftentimes I need to make sure that the parents are willing and able, and that the child's at a place where they can emotionally handle the parent to be in the playroom, that they don't see it as somehow distrustful that the family has entered in on something that they're doing or their time. But I see that family is just such a key part of the process, that healing is vital with the parents to be included. I think some of the ways I include my family is, of course, with those weekly updates, the check-ins. We want to see what's happening at home. We want to hear about the things that are going on at school. Sometimes, right, there might be a little homework. The parents have different books or different podcasts to listen to learn different skills, you know, different techniques that I want them maybe to help the kids practice at home throughout the week, different things that the parents can model or look for. So overall, without that family support and that connection, it would be just a loss for the child in the play therapy process.
You know, as in anything else, there's no one parenting model that works for every child. And if it is true that we parent pretty much the way we were parented as children, it's like if that's not a good match for this child, then there may be some things happening with the parenting that aren't the most constructive or helpful for this child. Some children are just like super sensitive in some ways, and you know, having some of the discipline or punishment techniques are extremely hard on them. So there's a good bit of working with parents to think through parenting strategies, think through scenarios, come up with some alternatives or some things that they can do differently. Do we need to think about doing reward charts to try to improve on some of the desired behaviors? And do we need to think about a limiting screen time or making children earn screen time as opposed to taking screen time away? And sometimes it's a small tweak in what needs to change. So that's something that the parents and I are talking about on an ongoing basis regularly, you know, revisiting, you know, what they do and how the child reacts and what kind of outcomes they're getting from that.
I invite our listeners to join our conversation this evening. We are discussing play therapy. Call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. What about adults? Can play therapy be used with adults?
I've used Santre work with adults, and they, with success, they enjoy that. You know, if I've got a client that's kind of the creative sort, then giving them a creative outlet in therapy is often like the thing that they need. Even having them do creative journal assignments or art drawing, whatever their expression is. So yes, it can be. I haven't thought about playing or doing, I guess it would be called adult-centered play therapy. Haven't thought about doing that.
I've worked with older adolescents, so 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and typically, right, they have the vocabulary, and we're mostly just doing talk therapy. Talk therapy is what you think of when you walk into a counseling office and you're kind of working through your problems and talking about your week. But oftentimes, I've seen Santre or art, or even sometimes they'll play games or puppets, which always surprise me. But taking on those different roles, when they are in that safe place, they know their friends aren't around, no one's really going to know but me, they will begin to use the toys in my office, especially if they have things that are uncomfortable, maybe to verbally talk about. So things that they would be embarrassing or just they're not ready to fully process, but they kind of are. They want to give you a glimpse. They might begin to use the sand or the art to begin to kind of uncover it and show things that maybe they necessarily aren't cognitively even aware of in their verbal processing.
I want to circle back around to something that we touched on a minute ago. It involves having the parents in the playroom and trauma work. So if I'm doing trauma work with a young child, it's imperative to me that the parent be in the room, especially if I'm doing EMDR, which is the kind of trauma work I do with children, then the parent needs to be part of that process.
I want to invite our listeners to call and join our conversation. This evening, we are discussing play therapy. You can call by joining in and having a question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So not all counselors or social workers are trained in play therapy. So how might someone who is looking for a play therapist, someone who is a registered play therapist, how might someone go about finding someone who has that specialty?
Yeah, so it is a specialty. It's a point that we have lots of counselors that maybe even work with children, work with young kids, like to work with adolescents, but maybe don't have that necessarily that training or that background. So some counselors do have toys in their office that they do use, or maybe they have games that they use as they work with children that can be helpful, but maybe are lacking the educational background and then the supervision, which is something I think we'll dive into a little later. But all the kind of everything that needs to take place to become a registered play therapist. It really is a specialty. How you find one in the local area is a couple different ways. Well, again, I mentioned this Association for Play Therapy. It is a United States, we can go any state. If you're looking for a registered play therapist, you can point your zip code and find one that they meet all the qualifications, all the standards, have received all of that certification and training is one way to find them. If you are looking for somebody maybe in the local area for Shreveport or Bossier, both Linda and myself have availability, as well as a couple other play therapists that we do know in the local area. They take different insurances. You can call the back of your insurance card and they'll be able to help you locate if you are asking for a registered play therapist.
The Association for Play Therapy, and it's a4pt.org. If you go there, there's a link that says, basically looking for a play therapist or how to find a play therapist, and the drop-down menus that give you, you enter your zip code or whatever, and it will pull up a list of play therapists in your area. In the Shreveport-Bossier area, there are only 6 registered play therapists and 1 play therapy supervisor of those 6. It's included in that 6. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about a specialty, we're talking about a very small percent of the local therapists that have gone to the links to get the special training to become a play therapist.
And I think as somebody who, is part of this community and is really passionate about being able to offer the higher quality, the higher standard of care, as parents, as grandparents, as they are looking for somebody for their child and they're thinking, like, who can I go to? I think oftentimes, they might just find someone that they hear about or word of mouth. But to take maybe that extra second to go online to really find somebody that does have these qualifications, that does have this training, to be able to help support your child in the way that they need to be able to express and work through those things that they're going on and things they're going through.
Yeah, because often in the programs that we've all been involved in, we will touch on play therapy, but it's not something that is really emphasized. It really is an area of specialty that requires extra training and education and supervision and experience. So while most LPCs or psychologists may have a few tricks in their bag, to get really quality play therapy, you really need to see a registered play therapist, because that person is going to have that experience and training and so forth. So if someone wants to become a registered play therapist, how might they go about doing that? What does that require?
Well, first off, it kind of depends where they are in the process. The first thing that they need to do is you need to get a state license. So this is, either you're a social worker, if you want to be a licensed professional counselor. So if you're just beginning out, you're going to college, you want to make sure that you get your degree, your bachelor's degree. You want to specialize in maybe psychology or an undergrad degree that will help you further along. You'll then need your master's. And after your master's, right, you're going to go ahead and take that state test and get your particular state licensure that will begin to help and kind of start the process. After you've earned that sort of master's degree and that higher level experience in mental health, you're going to then have 2 years of this sort of clinical experience of play therapy, if you will. You're going to need to complete 150 hours of play therapy instruction. And there's only certain coursework, there's only certain colleges or teachers that are able to offer you this particular instruction of training. Once you get all of those 150 hours, you're then going to be required to meet with a supervisor. So it's a registered play therapy supervisor who's gone through even more training. And they're going to want to have direct client hours. So as Linda and I were learning how to become a play therapist, we worked with patients, we worked with our child, and we were seeing somebody for supervision that we could ask questions to. We could say, how is this work? What do we do? How could we improve? How could we get better? We were always trying to strengthen these skills and these skill sets. And that is 350 direct client contact hours that we needed under this supervision of care to even begin to kind of start that play therapy process. So everybody who has that RPT, those 3 letters behind their name, they're the registered play therapist, they've all gone through the same sort of steps as part of the process of what we needed to kind of accomplish to become this registered play therapist. I think it has changed a little bit since Linda and I have both gotten our credentials, in the sense that they've now taken the standard and broken it into step 1, 2, and 3. So it's the exact same level of care that you need to get it. But now you can, if you are going through the process, you can say I'm at step 1, 2, or 3. It kind of also helps those people who are kind of in this provisional registered play therapist break apart who has what experience and what training.
I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation. This evening we are discussing play therapy. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So we have a question about play dates. Is there any chance that play dates can be overused? Are play dates helpful for children? Is that something that can be helpful to develop social skills or things like that? Or can we have too many play dates with kids?
You can probably overdo anything if you try. I think overall play dates are very helpful. But I could see where, you know, there are could be situations where parents over-depend on, almost abdicate some of their own parenting responsibility to a play date. I've not personally seen that happen, but I could imagine that it's possible.
I think it's also important to kind of look at who are you having the play dates with? You know, is it just somebody that mom to mom you guys are best friends with? Or, you know, is the child and the child that are playing together, you know, friends? Do they play positively together? Is this something that they're growing with? Is this something that they're strengthening? Or maybe, you know, is it something, again, like I mentioned, that just the mom and mom are really good friends and instead of having play dates, maybe want to just go get coffee every once in a while by themselves?
I want to invite our listeners to call and join our conversation. This evening we are discussing play therapy. Call with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So why don't we go through and talk a little bit about maybe the different disorders and how you might use play therapy to address any disorder that you feel like would be helpful for listeners to know a little bit more about, and how you might go through and address that disorder with play therapy.
I'll start. In a month or so, I'm going to be starting a new group where I work, and it will be for early elementary age children that having an anxiety disorder. So I'm targeting first, second, third graders. I have identified a curriculum that helps with identifying the emotion, identifying the sensations that are felt in the body, learning to externalize the anxiety, kind of be able to talk about it, to visualize the anxiety almost like a bully that's trying to tell you how you should do or what you shouldn't do, and learn to talk back to the anxiety. So those are all playful interventions. There's a lot of drawing and coloring and making superheroes and shields and worry monsters and that type of stuff. Also in that curriculum, there's teaching some coping skills, the breathing, the grounding, mindfulness strategies, along with the talking back to the anxiety. So that would be an example of using play therapy in kind of a cognitive behavioral sense to address the anxiety.
And would you describe what mindfulness is for any listeners that don't that aren't familiar with what mindfulness is?
As I would explain it to a child, it's being aware of where you are at the moment. So it's the things you can see, the things you can hear, the things you can taste, what's going on in the room. It's like that is the kind of mindfulness. I teach some mindful breathing, like really being in tune with your breath and feeling the sensation of breathing. So that's when I talk about mindfulness, that's where I'm going with it.
I think Linda, as she's talking about mindfulness and coping skills and, you know, all the different techniques that we do use, they are so broad that they're able to help with all the different sort of disorders, right? Deep breathing and mindfulness as a whole can cover, you know, whether we're feeling really anxious or whether, you know, we're feeling really sad or depressed. They can kind of cover these. The techniques and the skills are broad enough that we can able to kind of fine tune them for maybe particularly what that child needs sitting right in front of us. But they're also broad enough that they're able to help each individual that may come into our office.
Another thing I enjoy doing, it's a really fun intervention, is helping children make a feel better bag. And we literally take like a lunch sack or a gift bag that they get to put their name on and decorate. And then each week we learn a new coping skill and we put something in the bag that is that's key to that. So if we learn breathing strategies, I print out little cards that have the directions and put them in the bag, or I put a pinwheel in the bag. So when we're talking about mindfulness and thinking of what is something that you enjoy looking at, we might look for a magazine picture or a photograph that they like that goes in the bag. What kind of music do you like? We might put a piece of hard candy in the bag to help them remember, you know, something that tastes good to them or just to use. So we'll, you know, I've done calming jars and find it jars. And so I'm looking for as many different items as we can think of to put in the bag so that when the child's upset, they can go to the bag, hopefully with their parent, and pull something out of the bag that they could use to help them calm down.
Yeah, so whether it's a bag, whether it's a calming box, whether we're at school, whether at home, we need to be able to, you know, learn those skills. And then again, we were talking about, you know, the family involvement, having those parents help them practice those techniques, or, oh, like you're seeming really mad right now. Let's go to your calming box. Let's go to your bag. Let's see what skill you want to use. It's not just one of these times where you just come into the office, you play 45 minutes, an hour later, right? You go home and then I'll see you again next week. These are all skills that we really encourage the parents to be actively involved, that they help continue to support them throughout the week with all of these sort of skills and techniques.
Yeah, I think that's something really important that, you know, when we meet with children or adults for an hour a week or so forth, that, you know, that really needs to be reinforced throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, so that the children and adults that we work with can really develop those skills. So having parents involved and so forth can help to really reinforce the work that we're doing in session and help that translate outside of session. We have a caller. We have Elizabeth from Shreveport. Elizabeth, go right ahead with your question or comment. Oh, I think we might have lost Elizabeth. Let me see if we can get her back in just a minute. So what about social skills groups? I love social skills groups. I cannot, I refer kids to social skills groups all the time. Would y'all mind talking a little bit more about what social skills groups are and how they can help children and just the different ways that they are used with different various problems that children might have?
At Interactional Services, where I work, there's a social skills group every day of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, based on age. And that's the primary criteria, is the age and that the child's been referred because of a social skills issue. So I co-facilitate the group that's kindergarten, first, second, and third grade. So 5 to 9. And in that age group, the social skills that we work on the most are so very basic, but it is taking turns. It's not interrupting. It's not talking over people. It's saying please and thank you. It's not pushing. It is the simplest level of social skills, but each of the children in the group has got an issue with that.
And I think what's important, again, is the big picture, that we're not just simply teaching yes, we're teaching please and thank you and await our turn, but in the big skills, these skills that we're learning in such, these small ages are going to help as we continue to grow, help as we continue to become adults. So learning how others are feeling, right? Learning impulse control, learning patience, learning to be kind to others or to be selfless in certain situations. These are all the skills that we, you know, want to have young children grow up to have, that we want other people to surround ourselves in the world, our friends. I know I want people that are kind to me and are nice. And so these are just the little ways we are trying to teach those big picture skills.
And we have a caller, actually. I'm going to get to that really quickly. So Samantha from Shreveport, go right ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Really appreciate the conversation. I'm wondering what resources might be in the area for anxiety disorders in children that are born of a post-infectious autoimmune illness. So these are called PANS or PANDAS, pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders that are caused by either strep or another bacterial or viral illness that present as anxiety or very acute separation anxiety or OCD. What resources do we have available? Certainly, cognitive behavioral therapy is a piece of that, but it's also a much more complex medical issue.
And just in general, cognitive behavioral therapy is really not appropriate until the child's at least 8 and has some abstract thinking ability. So I've treated one child with PANS, and we used just child-centered play therapy and eventually added him to the social skills group, and he did great in there. We can't address the medical issue. That's totally inappropriate for us to delve into that. But the behaviors, the issues, the anxiety, the mood fluctuations that come with the PANS, it's like we just deal with that as any other child.
Thanks.
Thank you for your call, Samantha. And we lost Elizabeth. Elizabeth, call back if you can. So any other, we've got about 10 minutes left, any other suggestions or thoughts that you would like to share with the public about play therapy, or like I said, just, you know, kind of, suggestions? Are there things that parents can do at home, or is this something that really, they need to be careful with? Can they play therapeutically with their kids, or is this really something that they need to kind of stay away from?
Oh my gosh, what a great question. Absolutely, parents can play therapeutically with their children. In fact, there's a type of play therapy called filial play therapy, where the parents are taught some of the basic skills, some of the same skills that we're using in the playroom to use with their children. There is a play therapist at the Pinnell Counseling Center at Broadmoor Baptist Church, Emily Vinson, who has done filial play therapy classes for parents. I think she's out on maternity leave, but I took a class with her there, and I was amazed at the parallel between what we do in the playroom and the things that were taught for the parents.
Yeah, and I think speaking to the parents that are like, oh, I've never gone to a class. I don't, you know any of those skills. I don't really know what I'm doing. I think you can never have too many positive interactions with their children. So undivided one-on-one time where you guys are playing a board game or playing at the park, just you and your child, I think you can never have too much of that just positive interactions between each other.
Learn active listening. Learn how to reflect back to your child what you see them experiencing, whether it's emotionally, behaviorally, what you think is going on with them. Reflect back. Reflect that back to them. There's many resources for parents on whether it's called active listening, reflective listening. It's basically all this, you know, the same type of thing. Having a special time with your child, where it is a parent and a child, and that is the child gets to choose what to do that night or for that period of time, whether that's an hour or an evening. And the parent is it's just the two of them. And the child gets to pretty much lead the activity or the interaction for the evening. Play board games with your children. Have family game night.
I think sometimes in this newer generation, parents are wondering about electronics, about screen time, about social media, and I'm sure that could be a whole nother segment. But putting down, right, as a parent, to put down the phone, to maybe put it on silence while you're playing with your child, while you guys are at the park, really to show them that they are valued, that they have your full attention. Another thing I like to tell families is we are busy and we are stressed. And an easy way we can kind of unstress and unclutter is to create margin. So if we know we have to leave out the door at 7 a.m. to get everybody off to school in time, we want to be able to, as parents and families, to create that margin. We want to make sure that we have that extra 10 minutes or so. So if a child is feeling really rushed and feeling really nervous, that you have those moments where you can talk with them, you can teach them the skills, you can help them practice everything that they're learning. That we're not so stressed. That as adults, we can practice a little bit of mindfulness as well in our own lives.
We have about 2 minutes left. Any last suggestions or thoughts?
I wanted to tag onto something that Nicole talked about. In our social skills group on Tuesday, these are the kids that are basically from 5 to 8. We start out the group with a quick show and tell, but then a highlight for every child to go around and share a highlight of what happened during the week. Something kind of good that happened, and a low light. Something not so good that happened. It almost becomes a process group for a period. We've had the children be so incredibly sympathetic and supportive when one of their group members has gone through something, and rejoice and celebrate at other times with the kids. It is so very sweet. And without us saying directly, you know, that we're teaching something about emotions or pointing that out and making a deal of it, it's like the lesson has been taught.
I think if there's any, you know, parents, grandparents, caregivers that are listening and they're kind of wondering, right, I don't know, does my child need play therapy? You know, maybe I should bring them. I still have more questions. I think I speak both for Linda and myself. You know, definitely feel free to reach out. If you have questions, you have concerns, we are here to help. As a community, there are people to be able to help and just make a difference in that child's life.
Well, thank you both ladies so much for talking with us this evening about play therapy. As our guests, we had Linda Grayson and Nicole Lahr, both registered play therapists. We really appreciate your time and your expertise, and there are so few of you in town. Please don't go anywhere. Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Production assistance has been provided this evening by Sheila Lawrence and Wally Derleth. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.